Hey everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive. Today we're going way back to ancient India.
All right.
About 600 to 300 BCE.
Okay.
A period known as the Mahajanapada era.
Yeah.
And we're going to uncover how this era saw this like surprising surge in urban life and economic activity. And you might be thinking ancient India, not Wall Street.
Right.
But trust me, the parallels are fascinating.
It's really interesting to see how this period lays the foundation for so much of what comes later in India's development.
Yeah, and you know what's really wild is we're going to be exploring this through what might seem like some kind of unusual sources.
Yeah.
We've got audio snippets from a previous deep dive that we did on the Vedas.
Okay.
And we've got excerpts from this book about 18th century British rule in Bengal.
Interesting.
Now, I know that sounds like a strange mix, but stick with us.
Yeah.
It's going to get really eye-opening.
I think the beauty of these sources is that even though they're separated by centuries,
right,
they offer these like glimpses into recurring patterns in governance, power dynamics, economic change.
Okay, so let's start with the Vedas. I mean, they're usually associated with spiritual teachings, right?
Right, yeah. Primarily known for their spiritual and philosophical insights. But tucked within those hymns and rituals are these little hints of a massive societal shift.
Okay.
And what we see is a transition from nomadic pastoralism to settled agriculture.
Oh, wow.
And this change had a ripple effect on everything.
So people putting down roots, literally.
Literally.
And that sets off this like chain reaction.
Precisely, yeah. This shift to agriculture wasn't just about farming techniques.
Mm-hmm.
It reshaped social structures, beliefs, and even how people understood their relationship with the cosmos.
Wow.
And crucially, it sets the stage for the rise of the Mahajanapada era.
Okay, so we're going from wandering herdsmen to farmers, and from there we see the emergence of these powerful city-states, these Mahajanapadas.
Mm.
But how does that leap happen?
Well, think about it. Once you transition to settled agriculture, you start producing more food than you immediately need.
Right.
The surplus leads to population growth, but also specialization.
Makes sense.
Not everyone needs to be directly involved in farming anymore.
Right.
You start to see the emergence of craftspeople, merchants, administrators, a whole new web of professions that thrive in a settled agricultural society.
It's like unlocking new levels in a civilization building game.
Right.
You get more resources, bigger population, and suddenly, bam, you've got cities popping up.
Exactly. And with these new urban centers, you need systems to manage this complexity.
Right.
And the Vedic texts give us glimpses of this,
mm-hmm.
references to assemblies, to ideas of kingship, even early concepts of law and justice.
So it's not just about economics. It's also about these changes in how people lived and worked.
Right.
Leading to new ways of organizing society.
Yeah, it's a whole new operating system is being developed.
Totally. And some of these cities like Rajagriha, Shravasti, Ujjain.
Mm-hmm. They weren't just any cities.
Right.
They became major hubs
of
trade and commerce.
Bustling marketplaces overflowing with goods from all corners of India and beyond. Spices, textiles, precious metals.
Oh, wow.
A real shopper's paradise.
That sounds amazing. But this wasn't just your typical village market, right? What made these urban centers so economically advanced?
That's what makes this period so remarkable.
Yeah.
We're not just talking about simple bartering here.
Mm-hmm.
The Mahajanapada era saw the development of these sophisticated market systems.
Okay.
The likes of which you might not expect in ancient India.
Really?
There's evidence suggesting the use of coins, standardized weights and measures, even early forms of banking and credit systems.
Wow.
We're talking about the foundation of a complex, interconnected economy.
So this is more than just trading goods. It's about establishing systems of trust, value, and exchange.
Absolutely.
They were building a financial infrastructure, not just marketplaces.
Yes. And this economic activity wasn't just contained within India's borders.
Right. Remember those trade networks we discussed earlier? The Mahajanapadas were actively participating in a globalized system that spanned continents.
Wow.
Goods, ideas, and cultural influences were flowing back and forth across vast distances.
It's mind-boggling to think that ancient India was part of this intricate web of global trade.
Yeah.
It really challenges our assumptions about the ancient world, doesn't it?
It does.
It wasn't isolated.
Yeah.
It was connected and vibrant.
Yeah.
But before we get too carried away with the wonders of ancient globalization, let's bring in the other piece of the puzzle. 18th century British rule in Bengal.
All right.
This might seem like a jarring shift, but bear with me.
Okay.
The British, arriving centuries later, were obsessed with understanding the Mughal constitution, believing it held the key to effectively ruling India.
Interesting.
They were like students poring over ancient texts,
right,
trying to decipher the secrets of successful governance.
Mm-hmm.
So they were looking to the past, to the Mughals, for a roadmap to navigate the complexities of ruling India.
Yeah.
I can see the logic there, but how does this connect back to the Mahajanapadas? We're talking about two very different periods in Indian history.
It's about recognizing those echoes across time.
Right.
Those recurring patterns.
Yeah.
Just as the British were grappling with the challenges of governing a vast and diverse land, the rulers of the Mahajanapadas faced similar dilemmas.
Right.
How do you establish authority?
Right.
Maintain order?
Yeah.
And manage a complex economy in a rapidly changing world? These are questions that transcend specific historical periods.
Totally. So even though they're separated by centuries, both the Mahajanapada rulers and the British were wrestling with these fundamental questions of power, legitimacy, and how to build a stable, prosperous society.
Exactly. And that's where the sources, as different as they seem, can offer these unexpected insights.
Yeah.
It's like holding up two seemingly unrelated pieces of a jigsaw puzzle
right.
and suddenly realizing that they fit together in a surprising and illuminating way.
I'm hooked. I can't wait to dig deeper into these connections.
Yeah.
But for now, let's take a quick pause and we'll come back refreshed to delve into the nitty-gritty of trade, power struggles, and the fascinating parallels between these two eras.
Sounds good. Welcome back, Deep Divers. Before the break, we were starting to uncover this bustling urban scene.
Yeah, it's incredible to think about these like vibrant cities emerging in ancient India.
Mm-hmm.
But like, what would it have actually been like to walk the streets of one of these Mahajanapada cities?
Imagine yourself stepping into a bustling marketplace.
Okay.
Merchants are calling out, trying to entice you with their wares.
Yeah.
You see blacksmiths hammering away at iron. The scent of spices fills the air.
Mm.
Carts rumbling over cobblestone streets.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been a sensory overload.
Wow.
A symphony of sights, sounds, and smells.
Okay, I'm feeling transported back in time.
Right, yeah.
But let's get down to business.
Mm.
We talked about these complex market systems with coins. Even early forms of banking, was this like a proto-capitalist system?
It's tempting to draw those direct comparisons,
right?
But it's crucial to remember that economic systems don't exist in a vacuum.
Okay.
The Mahajanapada era had its own unique blend of social and political structures that shaped its economic activity.
Right.
While we see elements that resonate with modern capitalism, it wouldn't be accurate to label it as such.
So a complex system, but not quite Wall Street as we know it.
Right.
What can you tell us about these early forms of banking? Like, how do they actually work?
Well, we have evidence of merchant guilds and associations playing a significant role.
Okay.
Think of them as a combination of early chambers of commerce and lending institutions.
Okay.
They helped regulate trade, set standards for weights and measures, even provided credit to their members.
So they weren't just facilitating trade.
Right.
They were building trust and helping to finance new ventures.
Exactly.
That's pretty impressive for the time.
And this economic dynamism wasn't confined within India's borders.
Right.
Remember those trade networks we discussed earlier?
Yes.
The Mahajanapadas were actively participating in a globalized system that spanned continents.
Okay, but hold on. We're talking ancient India, not Amazon Prime.
Right.
What kind of stuff was actually being traded across these networks? Give us some specifics.
Oh, where to even begin?
Yeah.
We're talking textiles woven with intricate designs.
Okay.
Exotic spices that would have tantalized taste buds.
Mm-hmm.
Gleaming gemstones and precious metals, even timber and ivory.
Wow.
And these goods weren't just commodities. They were carriers of ideas, religious practices, and cultural influences.
Yeah.
It was an exchange that went far beyond mere economic transactions.
So these trade routes were like the ancient internet, connecting people and cultures across vast distances.
Yeah.
It's amazing to consider how interconnected the world already was back then.
Right.
But let's shift gears for a moment.
Okay.
And circle back to the British perspective.
Right.
We talked about their fascination with the Mughal Constitution.
Yes.
What were they hoping to glean from it?
Imagine the British East India Company, a trading company, suddenly finding itself in the position of governing a vast and complex land like India.
Yeah.
They lacked a pre-existing model for this kind of imperial venture.
Right.
So they turned to the Mughals.
Okay.
The most recent successful rulers of India.
Yeah.
Searching for a blueprint for effective governance.
Makes sense. Don't reinvent the wheel seems like a pretty solid approach, especially when you're talking about ruling an empire.
Yeah.
But was there even a codified Mughal constitution? What were they expecting to find?
That's where things get interesting.
Okay.
The Mughal constitution wasn't a formal written document, like, say, a U.S. constitution.
Yeah.
It was more a set of practices, conventions, and administrative systems that had evolved organically over centuries.
So more like a constantly evolving set of unwritten rules and traditions.
Precisely.
Okay.
And this fluid dynamic system created a bit of a conundrum for the British.
I can imagine.
Who were used to a much more hierarchical and centralized model of power.
Right.
They were trying to map a very different understanding of governance onto their own existing frameworks.
It sounds like they were trying to fit a square peg into a round hole.
Yeah.
How did this Mughal system actually function? How did they conceive of power and governance?
Well, the Mughals, like many pre-colonial states in India, had a more nuanced and complex understanding of sovereignty.
Okay.
Power wasn't concentrated solely at the top.
Right.
It was often shared and negotiated among different actors.
Interesting.
Regional rulers, local elites, religious authorities all played a role.
Okay.
Think of it less as a pyramid and more as an intricate web of interconnected relationships and overlapping jurisdictions.
So a web of power instead of a rigid hierarchy.
Exactly.
That must have been challenging for the British to wrap their heads around.
And in their attempts to find this elusive Mughal constitution, they often ended up simplifying and distorting the very system they were trying to understand.
Oh, wow.
They were imposing their own need for order and clarity onto a reality that was much more fluid and ambiguous.
It's like they were trying to write the answers to a test in the wrong language.
Right.
Did this misunderstanding have any consequences for how they ruled India?
Absolutely. Their attempts to shoehorn this complex dynamic system into their own preconceived notions had profound and often unintended consequences.
Wow.
They're missing crucial nuances.
Right.
And that was shaped their interactions with Indian society in significant ways.
Okay. I'm sensing this is leading to some major clashes of cultures and governance styles.
Yeah.
But before we delve into that, let's give our listeners a chance to catch their breath.
Okay.
We've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah.
From bustling marketplaces to intricate trade networks and complex power dynamics.
Take a moment, deep divers, to process all this information. Let those images of ancient cities and vibrant marketplaces sink in. And when we come back, we'll explore how the British attempts to decipher the Mughal constitution played out in their approach to ruling India.
All right, deep divers. We're back. And before the break, we were talking about the British East India Company and their fascination with this Mughal constitution.
Right. Yeah. They were looking for that guidebook on how to rule. But like we said, it sounds like they might have missed some key details.
So like what happened when this idealized version of the Mughal system clashed with the reality of ruling India?
Well, as the British gained more power and influence, they became less interested in adapting to existing systems and more focused on asserting their own authority.
Okay.
They started to view their own legal and administrative systems as superior, more enlightened.
Oh, wow. So that initial fascination with the Mughals.
Yeah.
Was it more about finding justification for their rule than actually understanding how things worked?
You could say that, yeah, the ancient constitution narrative gave them a way to claim legitimacy, to say they were ruling in accordance with Indian traditions.
Right.
But over time, their focus shifted towards imposing their own vision of order and progress.
It sounds like a classic case of power corrupts.
Right.
The more power they gained, the less they felt the need to respect local customs and traditions.
It's a pattern we see throughout history.
Right.
The British, with their growing empire and sense of global dominance, they felt increasingly justified in imposing their own systems on India.
Right.
And this, of course, led to all sorts of unintended consequences and fueled resistance to their rule.
It makes you wonder if they'd embraced that complexity instead of trying to simplify it. Would their approach to governance have been different?
Yeah.
Would it have been more successful, perhaps less disruptive?
That's a question historians continue to debate.
Right.
But it highlights the importance of understanding context, of recognizing the nuances and complexities of different cultures and systems of governance.
It's like that saying, if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Right.
the British brought their own set of tools and assumptions to India.
Yeah.
And they used them to shape their understanding of how things should work.
Precisely. And by doing so, they often missed the subtleties and complexities that made Indian society so unique.
Right.
This mismatch between their preconceived notions
yeah.
and the reality on the ground had a profound impact
right.
on the trajectory of British rule in India.
So this has been such an eye-opening conversation.
It has.
We started by exploring the bustling urban scene of the Mahajanapada era with its sophisticated trade networks and vibrant marketplaces.
Mm-hmm.
Then we jump forward in time to examine how the British grappled with the challenges of ruling India.
Yeah.
Seeking guidance from the Mughals.
Mm-hmm.
And in both these seemingly disparate periods,
right.
we see these recurring themes of power, legitimacy, and the complexities of governing diverse societies.
What's fascinating is how these themes transcend time and place.
Yeah.
They're not just historical curiosities.
Mm.
They speak to fundamental questions about human nature.
Right.
How we organize ourselves and how we grapple with the challenges of living together
yeah.
in ever-evolving societies.
So what's the mind-blowing thought you're going to leave our listeners with today?
Mm-hmm.
What should they be pondering as they go about their day?
Imagine stepping into a time machine and finding yourself in one of those bustling Mahajanapada cities.
Okay.
Would you recognize the seeds of our modern world in their marketplaces,
mm-hmm.
their innovations, their ambitions?
Yeah.
Would you feel a sense of connection, of shared humanity across the millennia? Or would their worldview be utterly alien to us? It's a question worth pondering
yeah.
as it challenges us to consider how much we've changed
right.
and how much remains fundamentally the same.
Wow, that's an image that's going to stay with me.
Yeah.
I can already picture myself trying to navigate that ancient marketplace, haggling over prices.
Right.
Marveling at their ingenuity. It's a reminder that history isn't just a collection of names and dates.
Mm-hmm.
It's a living, breathing tapestry of human experiences that continue to shape our world today.
And that's the beauty of these deep dives, isn't it?
Yes.
They allow us to explore these connections, to challenge our assumptions, and to gain a deeper appreciation for the richness and complexity of the human story.
Well said. Thanks for joining us on this incredible journey through time. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep into the mysteries of our world.